Hey everyone, and welcome into Social, the Power of Relationships podcast. I'm Josh.
And I'm Jason.
Today, we're going to continue our conversation about the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. Today, we're going to talk about the section of winning people to your way of thinking.
It sounds so wrong.
It sounds... You could interpret it as like a little manipulative, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. How to trick people into agreeing with you.
I think that's one of the reasons why people have hesitated to reading this book. Really? Like, cause I've had a couple of friends who I've shared the book, cause I'm really passionate about this book and how much it's helped me. And I've had friends who's like, yeah, I thought about reading that book, but it just seems so manipulative. Yeah. And they just read the title, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And that even sounds a little manipulative, but we're all like, in the end, we all influence each other, whether we are aware of it or not.
We do. Well, I guess you could say, so this book was written in like the early 1900s.
Yeah.
So, but in our day, we have a term called clickbait, right? Which is, you use a sensationalized title or something like a blog post or something like that. Mm-hmm. And it causes people to say, I've got to click on this because it's so outlandish or it's so extreme or whatever. It just makes you, okay, I've got to read into this. So
that's right.
In a sense, it's almost a little clickbaity the way that it's titled, How to Win Friends and Influence People. I've got to figure out how to win friends, how to learn how to manipulate people into doing what I want them to do. But that's not really what the book is about.
No, it's not. It's not about that at all. And anyway, we'll go into this.
Okay.
The book's all about really connecting with people and building those relationships. And knowing these principles can be manipulative, but it's better to be aware of them than to just avoid it altogether.
Because a lot of the principles really are about how to build a relationship in love and in sincerity, you know, so that you're learning how to actually connect with people. And then you do with that what you will, but and some people might use that to manipulate people, but I think the intention of the book is to learn how to just create genuine connections.
Yes. Right? Yes,
so
it
the
is.
The first principle here in this section is show respect for the other person's opinions. Never say you're wrong. This is interesting, right? Because it's not about saying never disagreeing, you know, because some people are wrong in their opinions, you know, but there's a way to approach it in a way that will be productive in creating a relationship and helping to influence people's opinions.
Very true. Right? In fact, Benjamin Franklin had a motto. Or was Benjamin Franklin or what's the guy with the tall top hat?
Abraham Lincoln.
Abraham Lincoln. Thanks, guys. So Benjamin Franklin was the one who actually started this, where he made a commitment never to criticize or say you're wrong to someone. Mm. He would avoid saying you're wrong by seeing, well, I could be wrong. Let's look at the facts. And that's how he would approach it.
Right.
In fact, that's an example that Dale Carnegie gives in the book. And it's a great way to start it off too, because you're admitting that you could be wrong.
Right.
Let's examine the facts.
So, yeah.
And so it's keeping it open. You're not encouraging them to throw up their walls.
Right.
By turning out and saying, no, you're wrong. And who knows, I could really be wrong, you know?
I've had conversations with people before where that type of thing happens, where it's, as soon as somebody says, no, you're wrong, then you have to defend yourself. You feel attacked and you feel like that your self-worth is being attacked.
Mm-hmm.
And so you have to defend yourself, usually with anger or something. But when somebody says, hey, I could be wrong about this, let's both come together and try to understand better, is basically the idea. And it just totally disarms you. And you can really start, you don't feel attacked. You don't feel like, you know, that you're being devalued or disregarded or anything like that. You feel like you're being listened to and heard, and you can just both, you know, cut through the emotion and the fear and have an open conversation.
Yeah, very true. The second one here is, if you are wrong, admit it quickly and empathetically.
Emphatically.
Yeah. There's been a couple of times where I've made mistakes at work, and I found this to be the most useful advice ever, is if I can quickly admit I've done something wrong and empathetically say I'm sorry.
Yeah.
And then the other person's more forgiving, especially if I really lather on the empathetically, like I did this so terribly. I'm a terrible person. It's like, if I'm the one, I feel much better at having myself do that than having them do it. Mm-hmm. Because if I'm doing it, then they turn around and take the other stand. They'll like, no, they'll defend me.
Yeah.
Which is, in fact, that's another thing that talks in anyway. Sorry. I'll stop saying that. That's another thing that they talk about in the book of when you've done something wrong, you admit it quickly and empathetically, and you, one of the ways of doing that is to almost condemn yourself of like, I'm sorry, I did this wrong. I feel really bad about this. I'm a terrible person. and just saying it and getting out there on the table helps them to feel empathetic for you.
Now, I wouldn't recommend putting yourself down so much, but I do believe in recognizing, acknowledging, and accepting our flaws and our mistakes. Because mm-hmm. I like, you know, what's the fear? A lot of times we want to blame. This is Brené Brown actually talks about one of the ways in which we experience or express shame, and is through blaming. So anytime something goes wrong, she gives the example of like the other morning she was making her coffee, you know, and she dropped it on the floor and spilled it everywhere. And the first response in her mind was to blame her husband, Steve, you know, or whatever his name, I can't remember his name. And the reason is because she had to find a reason that it wasn't her fault. And this happens instantly. And it happens all the time. We constantly try to find a way or a reason why it's not our fault. Because if it's our fault, then we're flawed and we're imperfect, and we feel like we're less worthy of love,
connection. And respect.
And so we automatically try to find somebody else to blame for everything that we do wrong. But why? Why not? It's fine. It's okay that you are imperfect. You made a mistake. It's totally fine. It's not a big deal, you know? And if we can learn how to have a self-respect that supports us and enables us to be able to accept our mistakes, it doesn't change my value or my worth as a person. It's okay that I made a mistake. Let me acknowledge that. I'll apologize. I was wrong. I was wrong about that. Mm-hmm. I apologize. And that's that, you know?
Yep, and move on quickly. And it's the trick too about this is being able to move past it as fast as possible. Because in the moment when you're working with other people and you've made a mistake and they need to know about it so you can fix the problem, move on. It is important to acknowledge it and then quickly as possible move on.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to dwell on it and make it just hurts yourself and also hurts your credibility if you keep on dwelling on the past. Right. And there's also situations where mistakes, the faster you can move on, it's almost like it never happened to begin with.
Right.
Especially when playing the piano or singing or like being a musician or acting on stage. Mm. But when you make a mistake, there's certain times where you just basically acknowledge it to yourself and quickly move past it, especially during piano. Professional piano players, they make mistakes all the time, but you'll never recognize them unless you know that piece inside and out like they do. And very few people ever know, and they'll never know that you made a mistake, because they don't stop their music to apologize for their mistake while they're in the moment playing for you. They just keep playing. And that's, anyway.
It reminds me of my one and only piano recital when I was a kid. And I messed up this song that I was doing, you know, playing. I mean, just super simple, basic song. Like, it was like first level one basic piano, right? I was like 10 or something. I don't know. I was young. And I messed up, and I panicked. Like, I didn't know what to do. And so I stood up, and then I like looked for my piano teacher, and like walked over to her, and she just like mimed out in the air like what I was the notes I was supposed to play. Like, she didn't know what to do either. And I was like, oh, okay. And I just went back and I started over and played it again. But in my mind, I didn't know. So it was kind of funny, because I sort of made a bigger deal out of it than it needed to be. Who cares? I messed up, and then just move on, you know, keep start over, whatever. But in the moment, I got a little self-conscious and worried. But
yeah, I think we all do that. So moral of this is, there's a time and a place to admit quickly and empathetically, and then there's also a time where you just need to quickly finish the project, finish the goal. And if people,
and you can always admit and acknowledge and accept that you made a mistake and it was imperfect, and that's fine. Nobody doesn't, you don't have to shame yourself. You don't have to feel less valuable because you made a mistake.
That's right. That's right. You don't want to, there's so many fine details to this, guys. Yeah. I definitely agree with Josh that you don't want to stop and shame yourself.
Yeah.
There are certain moments that it helps with relationships with other people when you can stop and apologize and admit your imperfections. But you only want to do that when it involves other people, because it helps them to feel empathy for you.
When it hurts other people, for
when
sure.
It hurts other people. But when it's just a mistake that you've made for yourself with your own project, no one else is involved.
Yeah.
In that situation, you just want to move through it as fast as possible.
And I think that I know there's a way to acknowledge your mistakes and recognize them, even to apologize for them and everything, without shaming yourself.
Agreed.
Shaming, you're taking it on personally and saying, this makes me less valuable. But you don't have to do that. It doesn't have to do that at all. You know, you can still admit your mistakes and acknowledge them and accept them and apologize for them without feeling like you're less valuable.
Agreed.
So what is this? Number 13, well, number 3, right? Mm-hmm. Begin in a friendly way.
So this one, he's referring to any situation that is like introductions, or you always want to start in a friendly way. Like, you don't... hang on. Give me a second to really think about this part of the book, because I've... there's a couple situations that in my mind I'm thinking through. I think he's referring to times when you have to approach someone when they've made a mistake.
Oh, okay.
I'm pretty sure that's what he's talking about in this one. Because other people make mistake, and sometimes you have to approach them about it, and so you can resolve it and overcome it. And the best way to do that is to start in a friendly way. Start with admiring them, saying something that you can appreciate about them.
Yeah.
Normally, people say it's a 3-to-1. So say 3 good things and then bring up one, the thing that you want them to improve on, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's tactful way of doing this, and this is so fine details, guys. Just so you know, it's all about practice and honing the skill of knowing how to bring up the positive things and then bring up the negative things in a way that helps. And one of the tricks is using and more than but. So you when you've had an issue with someone. I love using the dishes example, because everyone has dishes.
Mm-hmm.
Is you go up to them, say, hey, I really appreciate how you made your bed this morning and how you've left the bathroom nice and clean.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could wash the dishes, your dish.
So instead of saying, but if you could wash the dishes, you say, and.
Yeah. And if you could wash the dish, your dishes, yeah. I would appreciate that even more.
Because just that word, but, makes it feel like, okay, here's, these things are valuable. You are good because of these things, but you're bad for this other thing.
Exactly. Right? It's like turning around and that word, but, just basically completely eliminates everything right. that you just built them up.
Right.
And now you're tearing them down with that right. word, but.
Yeah.
But if you use yeah. the and word, it actually just
because
makes it
technically
better.
It seems like, well, I gave him two compliments and then one criticism. But when you say the word, but, there's no variableness to it. And so it just feels like it's a total cancel out of, mm-hmm. of everything good. So it's like, here's why you're good and here's why you're equally as bad.
That's right.
That's the way it feels.
It does.
And it's not really true, but that's kind of the way we interpret it.
So yes, begin in a friendlier way. And use and.
That's interesting.
And the next one of four is get the other person to say yes, yes, immediately. So when you're trying to convince someone to, like, if you're in, this comes in the fact of having a conflict with someone, in the fact that you're trying to help them resolve something. You're trying to. All right. The best example I can use is when I'm selling pest control. So when I was selling pest control, this was a couple of years ago, like 4 or 5 years ago, I went door to door in Texas. And the easiest way to get someone to help them see that if they need pest control, you're the best option is to get them to say yes ahead of time. So you're coming up with different questions of that are obvious at first of, yeah, I do have bugs. Everyone has bugs. Yes.
Yeah.
It's like, yes, I've had pest control in the past. Yes, they were a hassle to deal with. And yes, I'm looking to change. You know, that was kind of like the process that, in the end, I got really good at helping them start with the yes, and then which made it really easy for them to say, yes, I'll switch and use your pest control. Yeah.
Interesting. That's kind of like one of those little sales tactics.
It is. Yeah. It's a sales tactic. It's also something that lawyers use a lot.
Yeah.
Well,
I think what it can do is just in a conversation, you're developing you're finding common ground on something, right? You know, here's something we both think is good. We both agree on. Here's something we both, and you kind of, you're starting to develop a positivity in your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, that's right. So number five, let the other person do a great deal of the talking. We talked about this in the last episode a lot.
We can skip that one.
Well, but I think I love it. I think it's great. I think it's so valuable. If you're having a conversation with somebody, I mean, one of the most valuable tools in teaching anything, I teach a class in church, you know, and one of the best methods for me in teaching is just learning how to ask questions, learning how to ask the right questions and follow-up questions.
Mm-hmm.
Here's what I think about that. Oh, well, why? What about this little fine point that you brought up? And why do you think that? Or, let's dig a little bit deeper on that one topic. And this is something you made me think of. And so you're, what do you think about that? So you're really starting to ask the right questions, and people will it will just ignite a deep conversation with somebody if you can learn how to ask the right questions and then let them talk.
Oh, yeah. It's true. My passion is, what I love to do is try to find someone else's passion, find out what they love to talk about. And once in a while, I'll just fly out and ask them that of like, what is it that you love to talk about?
Mm-hmm.
What's sad is most people don't know what they love to talk about, but asking them the question, I'm hoping that one day they'll turn around and go, oh, this is something I like talking about. You know, it actually raises the question in their mind that they'll actually have an answer to it one day.
Yeah.
Because it really helps for for if you struggle with having conversations with people, with strangers, when you know what you like talking about, mm-hmm. it makes it really easy to talk. You can just start talking about that thing with them, whether it be football or some type of sport or art or podcasting. That's one thing I enjoy talking about. It just helps with conversation and building relationships.
Yeah, absolutely.
I was what, 5?
Yeah.
6. So number 6 is let the other person feel that the idea is theirs, his or hers. And this one has been hard for me to implement, but when I manage to pull it off, man, it's amazing. Because when they think it's their idea, they run with it with so much vigor and passion.
Yeah.
And that,
I don't know I don't really know how to do this myself. I feel a little weird even trying, I think, because it like makes me feel like I'm just trying to manipulate them into thinking the way I want to think.
Yeah.
But it's useful in places that, you know, you're a leader of somebody or something, and you can be certain that the idea that you have is important and valuable to other people. You know, I mean, what about something like if you're doing some humanitarian work, then if you can get people to feel ownership of an idea, you know, they'll be more passionate about getting involved, maybe.
Oh, yeah. It's very true. And you can't just get someone to think it's their idea if they don't already have a desire to do something similar. Like from my understanding, it's a matter of really identifying their values and identifying what is it that they really want, and then being able to give them that idea, you know. What I found most of the time is someone steals an idea where they think it was their idea to begin with, when in reality it wasn't. And I've learned to just let that slide, because it's better to just have the project get done than to have the credit.
Right.
And I found there was a quote somewhere that basically said that the person, I got to remember this quote. It involved basically, you can do anything you want as long as you don't care who gets the credit. Is really what it kind of boils down to.
Interesting. Yeah.
I got to remember that quote these days. I'm going to look it up and share it in the future.
Yeah.
Future podcasts.
Yeah.
It's a matter of just letting go of the... The need to own it, or the credibility that is.
Yeah, to try to get, because we're looking for like glory or something, or something that makes us feel like we're better than other people sometimes, or just that we get our own self-worth from how others perceive us. And therefore, if someone knows that I had this idea, then they'll think I'm more valuable, you know. But if you can let go of that and just believe that you're already perfectly valuable all the time, then you can let go of that need to own all the ideas.
That's right. In fact, a good example in my life, a personal example is starting this company. At first it was just me running and trying to pull this together. Mm-hmm. So when I talked about the company, I would say, my company, it's my project, it's mine, you know? And I realized that that's something that consciously or subconsciously has really hasn't helped other people really get involved as passionately. So I've more and more kind of tried to eliminate that out of my vocabulary altogether. It's our company. It's our project. It's our podcast, you know. Mm-hmm. Because it really is, and really understanding that, and making sure that other people are involved and they get the credit as much as possible. It helps them to feel valued, and it helps. It helps in every way to make the world go round, make things happen, and
right to get things to accomplish things, worthy goals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's see, 7. Try honestly to to see things from the other person's point of view. Yeah, and I mean a lot of these principles are like tie into previous principles, but it's just it kind of goes along with not trying to have credit for something, but not trying to win an argument or not trying to steamroll somebody else's opinion, mm-hmm. but trying to truly understand where they're coming from, because you might need to adjust your opinion, and if someone feels like you care about what they believe, without any kind of judgment or saying, hey, they're just trying to manipulate me to make me believe what they believe. But if you're just honest and open and willing to listen and try to understand, man, it's amazing what that will do for the improvement of both of your belief systems, right?
It does. And it gives you the language that you need to also help them understand you.
Yeah.
It's like when you can really understand who they are, and it helps you to connect with them better as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then 8, be sympathetic with the other person's ideas and desires. I think that goes hand in hand with honestly seeing things from the other person's point of view.
Yeah.
Is also knowing their ideas and desires. And this, in the book, he gives the example of a robber and a thief, or anyone who is sent to jail, they rarely see that what they've done is wrong. They've honestly feel justified mm-hmm. in what they've done, and that that's their point of view. And mm-hmm. when you can understand that's their point of view,
and why do they feel that way?
Mm-hmm.
What are the things that contributed to creating that opinion?
Right. And it's not just them, but like if the worst people in the world have that point of view, what makes you think that someone else, your family members or friends don't feel the same way about what they do? I mean, they're mm-hmm. they feel they're justified in what they do, and that's why they're doing it.
And the value is that if you can understand why somebody does something, you can help to change that belief. Because mm-hmm. you can understand the root of it. Well, here's why I feel that way. Because I had this experience when I was younger that made me feel devalued, and I'm just trying to take back what I, you know, right. I'm trying to take some value back wherever I can. So then you can kind of approach it from a different perspective.
That's right. Or not even so much changing it. Like, if that's what you want to do, it definitely helps you with influencing that change. But it's also a way of accepting it as is.
Yeah.
You know, and being able to accept them for who they are and admire them for who they are, even when they see things differently from you, even though they do things differently from you. It helps you to let go of those expectations and be able to just admire them for who they are.
And it forms a better connection.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It does. And I think there's one more on our list. Oh no, 2 more. Appeal to the noble motives and dramatize your ideas. So this comes to the fact of, we'll start with that first one. Hang on.
Appeal to the nobler motives.
I always think I can go faster by let's do both of them at the same time, but I realize you gotta.
The nobler motives. I mean, you're talking about altruism or things that you're seeking to serve something greater than yourself. You're seeking to serve humanity, serve another person, and so the nobler motives are like love and peace and you know, kindness, those mm-hmm. things that motivate you that are nobler and that help other people mm-hmm. more than the selfish ones.
That's right. And in the example in the book was this politician who doesn't like his kids being in the news.
Mm.
So he appeals to the noble motive of, hang on. There was two examples and I'm getting them confused in my mind. One was about, my mother doesn't appreciate when you swear type of thing. This is kind of this type of thing of higher noble. I got to come back to this one.
That's okay.
Nobler. It's identifying something that everyone can relate to.
Okay.
And then that's the motive.
So everyone, most people at least, they agree that people should be treated fairly.
Mm-hmm.
They agree that people shouldn't be discriminated against or abused, right? So you could, if you're speaking about helping to end homelessness, for instance, right? That's a noble motive and it's universal. I think everybody agrees it'd be really a good thing to be able to help end homelessness, you know? And then the motive there is love and compassion.
That's right.
And it's universal and it's noble.
That's right.
Yeah.
I agree. And then lastly is to dramatize your ideas. It's when you have an idea, you want to be able to like express it in a way that's really dramatic.
Yeah.
And in the book, he gives an example of this salesman coming to this person, trying to sell this person on, I think it was this particular medication. Or he was presenting his boss all these different, long story short, he labels all these different pill bottles with the information that he needed to get across to his boss to convey that he needed this thing to take place. And he takes these pill bottles and he pours them out on his boss's desk saying, this is the problem. You know, and he's dramatizing the idea instead of just putting it on a piece of paper and putting it on and showing him the numbers on a piece of paper. He puts the numbers on these pill bottles and pours it on the desk. Or this other guy who's trying to help people understand that there's way too many, atom bombs out there, nuclear bombs.
Mm.
And he dramatized the idea by dropping one BB in this barrel. And it makes this loud tick noise.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, and then he explains how powerful one atom bomb is. And then he takes a whole bowl of of these BBs and pours them into this bucket. And it's this loud, really scary noise. And then he says, that's how many atom bombs are in the world today. I mean, he's dramatizing the idea. He's making you realize, wow, this is a big deal.
Right. He's telling a story. He's selling the idea. He's making it compelling to somebody else. So we can't help but like be drawn into somebody else's story. If they're passionate about it, we'll feel that passion too. Even if it's something that we're not particularly interested in, we'll at least find some value in it and some interest in it because of their passion, right? And so, but it's telling it in a way that is, that engages the senses and engages the mind and is exciting, you know? So
that's right.
And these are like great, you know, sales tactics and stuff like that for getting different points across. Right. And some people are better at this than others, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like some people are better at creating a story. I mean, truly any movie you go to is dramatizing something.
Right. They're normally dramatizing the moral of the story through what they're sharing.
Yeah.
Or they're one of my favorite YouTube stars is this girl named Jaden Animations. In fact, James, Josh and I were talking about her earlier and she dramatizes her stories. So she basically shares these random stories about her life and she dramatizes it by how she animates it through her YouTube videos. And it's really funny.
It's compelling. You know, you can visually see it going on and it looks nice and then her words and it makes you feel like you're part of the story and it pulls you into the story.
Mm-hmm.
That's what compels people. So when you're passionate about something, I guess the principle here is when you, when you're passionate about something and you feel love for other people and concern for other people, and you can find a way to express that passion in a creative way, you'll have better success at influencing other people
in the words of
agree with you.
Dale Carnegie, win people to your way of thinking.
There you go. Yeah.
And that's all the time we have for you guys. There's still like 10 other principles that we could talk about in Dale Carnegie, but you guys really should just read the book. And it's a great book. It really helps with identifying ways that you can connect with people and share your ideas and be social.
There you go.
Yeah. Definitely subscribe to our YouTube channel on iTunes. Check us out on Instagram and Facebook. We have accounts on there. And you just gotta look up Social, the Power of Relationships. And that's also our website. And thanks so much.
Thanks, guys.